Latino USA.
Friday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Radio Catskill, keeping you connected with national news, community interviews, and your favorite local shows.
Welcome to the local edition, news and information to keep you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. And coming up tonight, I don't know if you've heard this, but State Senator Mike Martucci announced his re-election campaign today. And Patricio Rubio spoke to him earlier in the week following Governor Hochul's State of the State address for a response on that. That conversation is coming up in the second half of our program this evening. But first, it is Thursday here on the Local Edition. Thursday is when we check in with Wayne County. And there's a big hospital in Wayne County that's doing the work for a couple of counties there. Hospitals across the country right now are experiencing record surges in COVID cases. This week, Wayne Memorial said they were at capacity in its dedicated COVID unit with 7 COVID patients in the emergency room waiting for a bed to open up in the COVID unit. They're waiting to get into the COVID unit because it's full. And this is on top of existing staff shortages, a declining supply of monoclonal antibody treatments, and a large unvaccinated population. Of course, you know, most of the patients that wind up in the hospital are not vaccinated. And in a press release from just this morning, Wayne Memorial also said it has run out of the 10,000 free COVID tests that it had on hand to distribute to the public. They're already gone, but they do expect more next week. On the phone now to talk with us about all of this and what's happening in Wayne County during this massive COVID surge, we do have the director of patient care services, Wayne Memorial Hospital. It's Chandra Roberts. Chandra, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
So the numbers say that there's more cases of COVID in Wayne County now than at the beginning of the pandemic. But what's the situation like at Wayne Memorial? What are you seeing in person? Would you say that things are worse than they were at the beginning of the pandemic?
Absolutely, yes. Back at the beginning of the pandemic in 2020, our maximum capacity in any given time was about 13 patients. Last year during our COVID peak, we stretched up to, 15 to 18 patients in our COVID unit. But definitely over this past 2 weeks, we've seen the largest surge we've ever experienced with exactly as you mentioned before, our COVID unit was full. Our capacity is 20. And yes, we did have 7 people admitted and waiting in the emergency room for bed placement in our COVID unit.
Does that throw your protocols out of whack when that happens? I mean, how do you handle those spillover COVID patients?
Sure, absolutely it does. We do the best we can, and we try real hard to get in any extra staff to help take care of all those extra people. And I think we've done a pretty good job doing that. It's definitely not what I wish for anyone in healthcare to be experiencing right now. It is really a serious problem, that's for sure.
So out of all of these that we've mentioned, what are your biggest challenges right now?
Biggest challenge probably right now is staffing, and, being able to provide support to the staff at the bedside. They can do the physical work, but sometimes the emotional toll is bigger than the physical portion as well. So we try every day to evaluate the situation and put our best effort forward to provide support, both in increased staffing as much as we can and emotional support, whatever way we can.
And in terms of, let me just ask about that staffing, making sure that you've got the staffing, because one of the things that I mentioned at the beginning is that there's a staffing shortage. Is that the case?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. So, and also along the lines of, you say, evaluating the situation week by week, day by day, and then making adjustments. I heard that Wayne Memorial reopened its COVID testing site in Pike County as cases went up in both Pike and Wayne counties in the past week.
Yes, that's correct.
does that work, and can people utilize it?
So the testing center in Pike County is open 2 days a week, and unfortunately, I don't have paperwork in front of me to remember which 2 days a week it is. I know it's been advertised on our website and on our Facebook page. Our Honesdale location continues to be open 5.5 days a week, and people with a prescription can drive up for an immediate test at one of those sites.
We did see this press release this morning saying that, that Wayne Memorial had 10,000 tests, and they're already gone. But I guess more will be on the way for next week?
That's correct. We're on an allocation through our federally qualified health centers, also known as the community health centers. All of our local offices, we're distributing those out to the community over the course of 24 hours.
Okay. So most of the people that you're seeing in the hospital, as you're seeing too many patients even for your COVID unit in the hospital, most of these folks are unvaccinated?
The majority are unvaccinated, yes.
So we know that Wayne Memorial launched a huge vaccine hesitancy campaign with its legacy doctors. Doctors have been treating patients and their families and community for decades. How was that going, and what still needs to be done, and what could even be done to get more people vaccinated?
I think physicians need to continue having these conversations with their patients. Patients definitely need to be able to live, develop a level of trust in the healthcare system and a level of trust with their physicians, and the fact that it is a new vaccine. We know that that's probably a lot of the reason for hesitancy, is people just are very unsure yet if it's a safe thing to do. However, you know, we're seeing less impact on patients who are vaccinated. When those vaccinated patients do come into the hospital, they're much less likely to be severely ill.
Well, that's good news. So you're seeing the beneficial impact of the vaccine. You're seeing it in real time. What happens if people don't get a vaccine versus what happens if they do?
Well, if they're not vaccinated, then we struggle with a lot of morbidity, mortality rates being higher among that population of people.
Right, right, and you're seeing it right there in person. As in your position overseeing patient care services, perhaps you're working more with the care providers than the actual public. But I mean, do you ever have that conversation with people about trying to talk to them about vaccines?
Absolutely, yeah. I was a former nurse manager of the COVID unit, so I was working in there pretty often to experience what those providers in there were going through as well. And I recognize that sometimes people just have a strong feeling against vaccination, and as healthcare providers, you know, that can be frustrating, because we recognize the impact that vaccination can make in people's outcomes. However, we're here to also provide care no matter what the circumstances are, whether people are vaccinated or not. So it's up to us to continue to care for people regardless.
And, you know, you mentioned that the people that you're seeing come in that have been vaccinated, they're in the minority, and they're doing better. And that just kind of, that says to me there's got to be a lot of people out there who've been vaccinated who you never even have to see, because if they contract it, it's so mild, as what we've been having in the news. But is there, everything's been changing so much. We're like almost 2 years into this thing. And it's hard to keep track of what's going on, the new variants, new protocols, new recommendations from the CDC. Are you encountering any confusion from folks regarding things like when to get tested and what to do if you get a positive test or an exposure, or how long to quarantine and things like that?
Yes, it's difficult to keep up with frequent changes that we get coming down down our way. And, you know, there are recommendations for the general public that are different than the recommendations for the healthcare providers, and that are different than our school-aged children. So everyone's quarantine requirements vary a little bit, the most recent being the lightening up of quarantine requirements down to about 5 days. And that's a good thing, because, you know, people who are not very sick can get back to work or get back to school sooner. But we're also finding that for some people that really are sick, 5 days isn't enough, and they could still be contagious at that point. So it really is a tough thing to handle, and definitely all the changes. There's kind of constant confusion over what the requirements are on a day-to-day basis.
To cut through a lot of this, I think like my what I try to tell people based on the information I'm getting from like Sullivan County Public Health and looking at the CDC guidelines, it seems like one of the main ideas of this reduced period of quarantine is going, you know, quarantining for 5 days instead of 10. One of the main things that people got to keep in mind is that's if you're not experiencing symptoms at that point, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. The main point of it is don't go back to school or don't go back to work if you haven't been at least 24 hours with resolution of symptoms, especially a fever.
And this might not be something that you want to comment on, but I've just got to say that like it, one of the lessons that I hope that we walk away from this whole period, if we ever get like past this, is just the idea of like, don't go to work or school if you're the least bit sick anyway, because you don't know what it could be.
Absolutely.
You can give it to other people. I mean, it seems like, you know, flu season was always tough in our area this time of year with the flu. And I just feel like I hope some of these precautions that we're taking stick so that like we don't go back to that.
Well, you know, in 22 years of being a nurse, I've never seen a flu season this severe. And I definitely have experienced recently that people are, you know, back to going out and about. And it's nice to be able to be active in the community. I'm all for that in good time, but right now it's still a scary time. It's still a tough time. We're still experiencing a lot of illness from it, and I know people don't want to be tied down or cooped up any longer than they have to, myself included, but we're still up against a real troublesome pandemic.
Saying that it's the worst flu season you've seen in a long time, does that add to your challenges?
I didn't say it was the worst flu season. I meant it's worse than any flu season that I've experienced in 22 years. The COVID pandemic has been worse than a flu season. We've actually seen cases of flu in the last 2 years drop, probably 2 years ago and even last winter, because people were staying home more. They weren't going out in public as much, and they were wearing masks. So flu really kind of dropped off for 2 years. We are expecting a resurgence of flu. We've seen a little bit so far, but we do expect that maybe we'll be seeing more flu this year than we have in the last 2 years as well.
Is that another level of complexity for you on the ground at the hospital, where like somebody's got these symptoms, it could be COVID, could be flu, and do you have to test
for
both?
We test right away to determine whether they have COVID versus whether they have flu or RSV or something else.
Okay, great. Well, I thank you so much for taking this time to talk to us. I know I've been throwing lots of questions at you, and I'm wondering if there's anything that we didn't get to that you wanted to address, or any other topics that you want to share with folks while we've got you here.
Sure. I just feel that right now it's not a time to slide back on our mitigation efforts. I think it's important that people choose some type of mitigation effort to practice at this time, and whether it be social distancing or masking or vaccinating or simple hand hygiene, you know, if every person could practice some form of mitigation technique, that maybe our numbers would start coming down and take some burden off of our healthcare system across the country right now.
If you could like wave a magic wand and make any kind of change in terms of what's actually happening out there, is that what it would be? That just to get
Absolutely.
People to Okay. Well, Chandra Roberts, Director of Patient Care Services, Wayne Memorial Hospital. I know you're so busy, and I thank you so much for the work you're doing, and I thank you for taking this time to talk to us.
All right. Thanks so much for taking the time.
You're listening to the Local Edition, news and information to keep you connected. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Patricia Rabaio will be speaking with New York State Senator Mike Martucci. And just a reminder, there is a winter wind chill warning in effect for Delaware and Sullivan counties in New York State. A warning's more serious than an advisory. They're saying wind chills could be down to 20 or 30 below tomorrow night, Friday night, heading into Saturday. This warning goes into effect 7 p.m. tomorrow evening, stays into effect 1 p.m. on Saturday. The point is, cold weather is on its way back, and it's going to be bitter cold, dangerously cold. In northeast Pennsylvania, it's a wind chill advisory. So not as severe, but every bit as serious. Cold weather is back on its way. This is a local edition. A documentary like no other puts you right there in the heart of the movement.
I have no alternative but to lead a march to carry our grievances to the seat of government in the state of Alabama.
Stand where you are. This march will not continue.
From here to Montgomery, we will be there with you.
Saturday at noon on Radio Catskill.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb. This week on our show, in honor of the depths of winter, we're all about soup. We talk with Jen Lewis, author of the Chicken Soup Manifesto, to get her tips and recipes from around the world. We taste canned chicken stocks to find out which one we like best, and that's all coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11, on Radio Catskill. You're listening to Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to the local edition news and information, keeping you connected in the Catskills in northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole, and I'm about to hand things off to Patricio Rubio because State Senator Mike Martucci announced his re-election today, his re-election campaign for New York's 42nd State Senate District. And Patricio had spoken to Mike Martucci after Governor Hochul's State of the State address. Patricio Rubio spoke to Senator Martucci about what the governor was talking about in her State of State address and what he will be working on in the coming year here in 2022, the new year. Patricio starts off by first asking the senator what was his initial reaction to what Governor Hochul had to say.
Well, you know, my reaction to the State of the State's mixed. I mean, there were certainly things in the State of the State that I think are great proposals, and I look forward to working with the governor to implement. You know, some of those really top of my list would be the governor's proposal to institute term limits for statewide elected officials. In fact, I support term limits for legislators in the state Senate and the state assembly, and really elected officials up and down the ticket, whether it's local government or county government. I think that term limits are an important first step to cleaning up a lot of the corruption and a lot of the bad deals and old deals that are taking place here in Albany every day. So I applaud the governor on that proposal. I think that that was certainly, for me, one of the highlights of her State of the State.
What things should the governor should be focused on instead?
Well, I mean, listen, the first thing the speech did not have was a plan for real systemic change. And I'm talking about change that helps families deal with out-of-control costs of inflation right now, that deals with a public safety crisis that we're reading and seeing and hearing about every day in the news, and one that really gives small businesses the flexibility and the freedom to get back on their feet. So I think that the speech was a lot of rhetoric, you know, a lot of good feelings, a lot of, you know, good ideas. But what it was missing was really a concrete plan. You know, the governor talked about directing spending in certain areas, but short of a real plan to change the direction of our state, we've thrown money for decades at many of these issues and haven't made real progress. And I thought that the governor's speech lacked key detail on many of these fronts.
Currently, the 42nd District is seeing a surge in positive COVID-19 cases. How is your office working with the state, and what is your office doing to help the situation that's going on now?
Absolutely. So, you know, look, one of the ways that we know that we get past the current COVID surge is with testing. It's important that folks, know when they're infected with COVID. They know to stay home for the appropriate period of time, and then they can equally as importantly, test themselves back into work, back into school, back into regular life. So testing has certainly been at the forefront. I've been working with my colleague Aileen Gunther, in fact, just over this past weekend, doing testing distribution together. And we will continue to advocate to make sure that those resources come into the district. So testing is key. You know, really, Second, I stand against the one-size-fits-all plan that has been in place since day one of this pandemic. Our former governor, Andrew Cuomo, had made many executive orders that were statewide orders that were designed to manage the pandemic. And by pretty much all accounts, by if you look at any matrix, New York has been hit harder than almost any other state in the country. So what's clear is these one-size-fits-all mandates aren't working. And I would like to see a more regional approach with local leaders having more say over that process. And unfortunately, in Governor Hochul's State of the State address, she did not lay out a plan for a more regional approach to COVID. So I think that that's really important as we move forward, is that we let each region react a bit differently, because situations in New York City differ very significantly from the situation in Sullivan County, for example.
Right, right. Yeah, you talk about testing. It's amazing with this current surge. It's amazing how testing became such a scarcity. I just passed South Fallsburg, I think, last week, and there was a line down the block at one of the clinics. Folks just trying to get tested, whether they either have symptoms or have to have a negative test to go back to work or something like that. In the past, we had these large testing sites. Do you know of any talk of bringing those back from the state?
So I am currently not aware of a plan to unveil a Sullivan County mass testing site, though I would be supportive of one, and we continue to advocate with the governor for one. The governor is locating one in my district. In fact, there's an announcement just today that SUNY New Paltz, up in the New Paltz, Ulster County area, will be a state-run testing site, though I would like to see something more convenient with additional capacity located right in Sullivan County so that residents wouldn't have to travel so far.
Well, the new year is here. Happy New Year, Senator. What is your outlook for 2022? What things are you looking to tackle for the upcoming year?
Well, there are several really important issues that we have to work on. First, certainly, crime is still a top concern of New Yorkers. And what the governor did not speak about in her State of the State address was a plan, a concrete plan to address crime. And I think we all know that one of the ways to do that is to go back and take a look at the failed bail reform changes that were made several years ago. So top of my list is restoring judicial discretion so that our local judges can make determinations individually on a case-by-case basis with respect to defendants. That's a really important first step to making sure that we can help improve public safety and make our community safer. Second, hardest hit by the pandemic have been our farmers. And I carry several pieces of legislation, including a farm tax credit that helps our farmers stay on their feet. That this is such an important piece, especially to Sullivan County. So anything we can do to help support our farmers is key. And third and finally, I carry an important piece of legislation for our seniors. And this is a senior property tax relief bill. What I've heard nonstop as I travel around the district is how difficult it is for seniors to stay in New York, due in large part to the tremendous property tax burdens that the state carries. And while those burdens are tremendous for all families, they hit our seniors particularly hard. And it's really one of the number one reasons seniors leave our state in droves. In fact, New York ranks number one out of all 50 states in out-migration. So I will be working with members of the legislature to forward this senior tax property relief proposal, because I believe that we need to leave session this year having done something significant with respect to property taxes for our seniors, and really, engaging in a wider conversation about how we help with property tax relief in general.
If we could just switch topics here, talk about bail reform. You said you feel that bail reform has increased violence in our area, and you asked for to either do away with it or to reform it. Can you expand on that and why that should be?
Well, look, you don't have to take it from me. What I would say is, just take a look at what law enforcement has been talking about. Take a look at what our sheriff and district attorney in Sullivan County have been talking about and the dangers associated with bail reform. The bottom line is that policy's made their jobs more difficult. Law enforcement in our county is struggling with an opioid epidemic, as we all well know. And bail reform lays out a set of policies that allow drug dealers to remain on our streets. So, it's pretty simple. If we want to address an opioid problem in Sullivan County, it's really twofold. One, it's helping people who are addicted to opioids with treatment, But two, it's taking the people who are profiteering from the sale of this poison. I'm talking about drug dealers who are selling opioids. It's about taking them off the streets and having serious and heavy sanctions for people who are engaging in that sort of behavior. So, you know, the answer to the question is yes. You know, and I just give one example with respect to the, you know, the drug issue that we struggle with in our county. But, you know, again, listeners don't have to take my word for it. Just take a look at what district attorneys from both the Democrat and Republican Party have been saying about bail reform. Take a look at what our elected officials in law enforcement, the sheriffs, not only in Sullivan County, but around the state have been saying about it. They're singing in unison that there need to be changes to this program.
Now, the reason for bail reform, from what I understand, is to deal with these inequalities in society where a person could be arrested for a low-level crime, spend a weekend in jail, not make bail for $200, and lose their job, lose their career, and really change, upheal their lives, where a person who is in a better status could make bail and move on with their lives and go to a court case and afford a lawyer. So I think bail reform was set to sort of address these equalities in our society.
Sure. I mean, look, you know what? There's no question that we're all here, myself included, to talk about changes to any policy that bring things like equity and fairness to the equation. However, we can't do it at the expense of public safety. And, you know, look, I think fixing the bail reform issue is really very simple. You know, if someone is arrested and charged with a crime that potentially carries a sentence of jail time, I believe that they should have to stand in front of a judge and make the case for why they're not a threat to public safety and why they should be released without bail. That's something that I believe is a step in a process. And at the end of the day, our judges are accountable to the public as well. Judges are elected, whether they're local town judges or county court judges hearing felony cases. These judges are accountable for their decisions on the bench as well. So for us here in Albany to legislate away a judge's discretion is just not a step in the right direction. I do, however, agree that individuals that are committing very low-level crimes don't belong in jail. What I would say is there certainly were cases in this state in places like New York City. We've heard horror stories from Rikers Island where there were defendants who were sitting and waiting long periods of time. What I would tell you is that wasn't happening in Sullivan County at all before. So this was not a problem in the areas I represent. It was not a problem in Sullivan County. However, the new law is particularly problematic in Sullivan County. So, you know, perhaps there were changes that need to be made. Perhaps there were changes that applied to places like New York City. But again, this one size fits all approach is not good for the area where we live, because, again, it's created a situation where it's made it significantly more difficult for law enforcement, whether it's the district attorneys, the sheriffs, police chiefs, and on, to do their jobs and keep our community safe.
Thank you so much, Senator. We'll be speaking to the state senator for the 42nd District, Mike Martucci, about the past year and the outlook for the new year. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, and I look forward to coming back soon.
For Radio Catskill, I'm Patricio Rubio.
And thank you, Patricio, for doing that work there, doing that interview, talking to Senator Mike Martucci. And thanks again to Wayne Memorial and Chandra Roberts for joining us in the first half of the program. Thank you for listening. If you missed the first half of the program, the second half of the program, make sure you never miss any of this program. This is the local edition. If you sign up for our podcast, wherever you get your podcast from, you'll make sure that you never miss the local edition. It's a local edition from Radio Catskill. I've been your host, Jason Dole, and I'm going to be back tomorrow, and we're going to do it again. Or no, wait, actually, Patricia will be here tomorrow. It's the end of the week already. The point is, a local edition will be back. Somebody will be here. We'll talk to you. Conversations, news, information, it's keeping you connected. It's a local edition. Thank you for listening. John Gordon Ramble Tamble's coming up right next. Stay tuned.
The English singer-songwriter Graham Miles deserves to be much better known on the American side of the Atlantic. To make the point, I'll be playing some of his songs on the Wackaloo de Monkeys, with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, on Sunday afternoon at 3.
NPR News and this member station are here for you, no matter what. Thanks for your support and for making what we do possible.
Thank you for listening to WJFF Radio Catskill. Support the news, information, and entertainment your friends and neighbors rely on. Go to WJFF Radio.